This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening.
There are places I remember.
Memories, musical and maniacal, of the magical moment when the Beatles landed in the U.S. back in 1964. I was studying classical piano back then and was such a geeky skeptic of rock and roll as an 8-year-old, I'm embarrassed to recall arguing about why Beethoven's long hair was more appropriate than the Beatles with other kids in my school. I eventually stopped being such a dork and managed to love Beethoven and the Beatles. We remember the Beatles' arrival in the U.S. this hour, a look back at the Ed Sullivan Show, and a look forward at the Beatles' many-layered influence on popular music far and wide. Also, Facebook writes your biography to sort of show off all their clever algorithms and to make a point about online archiving. But first, a case of sexual abuse in a world closed to the public. Allegations that are distasteful and horrifying because they involve children. Allegations that are toxic and inflammatory because they involve institutions and individuals that represent ideals of perfection, virtue, heroism, artistic achievement, creativity. I could be talking about the Catholic Church and young boys. I could be talking about a high school football team and some young girls. I could be talking about legendary actor, director, and comedian Woody Allen and his young children. In all three cases, people took sides, defending the church and the priest's sexual abuse cases or defending the victims. Defending the high school football team in Steubenville, Ohio, as being slandered, or defending the young women charging rape at a party that clearly got out of hand. And there are legions of fans defending director Woody Allen when he says the allegations of sexual abuse from his 28-year-old adoptive daughter Dylan, when she was 7, are untrue and disgraceful. And there are legions of outraged, possibly former fans condemning Allen as a predator. In each case, a closed world of a church, a tight-knit team, or a family prevents the truth from being known. It's estimated in national statistics that 93% of juvenile sexual assault victims know their attacker. And in more than 1 in 3 of those cases, the attacker is a family member. What is our business here? There are barriers to telling and to investigating these kinds of sexual abuse cases that hinder our ability to have a coherent national conversation about them. Sasha Weiss, literary editor at TheNewYorker.com, recently blogged that the idea of "it's none of our business" constitutes a dangerous boundary between private life and public health. Also with me is Dr. Margaret Moon, assistant professor in pediatrics and clinical ethics at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
So, Dr. Moon, what do you think about the barrier of people believing that it's nobody's business what goes on inside a family regarding sexual activity, sexual abuse, the kinds of things that we've talked about in some of these controversial stories?
There's sort of two important aspects to it. As a society, we do work really hard to protect families because families are important to the well-being of children, and families, we have a sense that families deserve some privacy. But that ends up being secondary to our more important duty to protect children. So I think that the hard stop against the privacy that we afford families is the protection and the well-being of children. So it is our business when children are suffering.
And it might be your business as a professional, as a pediatrician, and it might be law enforcement's business. But in general, the public doesn't consider it its business.
Well, again, I think that there are restrictions. If you see something happening in a public space, if you're in the grocery store and somebody's about to hit their child, that's actually a very public act. And I think that we may have a duty as citizens or as people in this society to offer some assistance to that situation, not necessarily judging, not necessarily condemning, but just understanding that people are suffering and it might be a good time to step in and see if we can help ease the situation to protect the child. Things that happen inside a household end up not coming into the public eye unless, somebody brings them into the public eye. So, those two things are different situations. Both of them matter. We don't have as much access to what happens inside the home, but when it becomes public, our duties probably change.
Sasha Weiss, Dr. Moon makes a good point. If Woody Allen had been seen, kicking one of his kids around in the Fairway Market, we'd be having a fundamentally different conversation about all this than we are having now. What do you make of the fact that there is this none of our business barrier here?
Well, it's very complex because this is a case that took place a long time ago. It was never prosecuted in court, although the legal inquiry has a lot of ambiguity to it. There's an added barrier of time having elapsed and the case never having been adequately resolved. But now we do, essentially, it has come into the light. I mean, we don't see him hitting his kid in the supermarket, but his kid has come out and said this happened in startling detail that's very arresting and hard to ignore.
You know, there's also a full spectrum here, because back in the 80s and 90s, there was a whole series of stories about suppressed sexual abuse memories that created these celebrated trials in Los Angeles and on the East Coast, resulted in some cases in convictions, but in other cases the memories were found to be false, and it absolutely destroyed certain families. So it's very, very difficult to see this clearly.
I agree, but that's why I think the case is important to talk about, because it raises exactly those questions. How do we understand testimony from a child who's in some kind of traumatic family situation? I mean, whether or not sexual abuse occurred, it was a very complicated household undergoing very complicated emotional stuff going on there. So how do we understand her testimony? How often does false testimony take place? These are questions that are being posed by this case now. And I think that it's not that often that a case like this is aired in such a huge way in the national news. Usually when we read about rape cases in the national news, they're public violent crimes that we can all get very upset about.
Do you think there's a "if you see something, say something" mechanism for allowing kids, empowering kids to raise their hand early on so it doesn't have to be this trauma when they're adults? I can tell you, and Dr. Moon, I know you're with me on this, I can tell you that with my own daughters in their health classes these days, there are explicit discussions of what should and should not happen and what can and cannot happen and what should and should not be reported. And my kids seem very empowered. Mm-hmm. Margaret Moon, is that the wave of the future in terms of education, in terms of the way we acculture kids to this kind of activity?
Well, it's been our approach to education around safety in kids for a long time. So this is not a new thing to tell children that there are boundaries. This kind of touching is okay. That kind of touching is not okay. But what we have never been all that great at is allowing children to actually speak out. So we have made good strides in helping children and families to understand that we ought to speak out. But I don't think as a society we are quite far enough yet in terms of really letting children do so. So I think the training is there, but getting the training to be effective and getting children to actually learn to have confidence in raising their voice. I mean, this is, we're asking questions, we're asking them to talk about their parents, and the relationships between children and parents are incredibly important. And children are quick to understand that they need the protection of their parents. So it's, we're putting a lot of burden on the most vulnerable person in the room there when we're asking a child to speak out against their parents.
A thought experiment before we go. Imagine a child who has had an experience that is very similar to what they might be reading about or seeing online in these very public cases that we've been talking about. Is there a place for them to go to report that currently in our society?
As a pediatrician, I offer that to children. But again, it's the I am one person, I am one voice. So we look hard for the safety net around children. We hope that children have other responsible adults in their lives that they feel safe with. We hope that they can talk to a pediatrician. It is incredibly variable the extent to which that safety net is present and successful.
Well, thank you, Dr. Moon, for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much.
And Sasha Weiss, thanks so much for sort of sparking this entire discussion in your blog. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.